Late last summer, the owner of Manchester's most notorious flat received an unlikely visitor. The two-bed apartment on Dale Street was at the centre of an explosive row that had given rise to countless angry tweets and had even been covered by the national press. At issue was whether noise emanating from the popular music venue Night and Day Cafe was making life unbearable for the two residents of the flat. But everyone you spoke to said it was much bigger than that. This was about what kind of city we wanted to be. A proxy war in the fight for Manchester's soul. Welcome to the Manchester Weekly from the Mill. Jack, I was reading two paragraphs, the first two paragraphs of your big weekend read about Night and Day. I'm Yoshi, the founder of The Mill. You are Mr. Jack Dahanty.
Hello.
Staff writer at The Mill. We are going to be talking about one of the most popular stories we've done in recent times. This big piece you wrote about Night and Day. I didn't expect it to go as big as it did, but I think you did.
I think I did, yeah. Mostly because I had I had a bit more of a sense of what I was hearing, and I suppose I was it does sort of counter what has come before. So that kind of always gives you a sense that you're going to...
Which we'll dig into.
Yeah, big time.
Dig into in depth. Sophie, our senior editor, also expected it to be really big. So it was a piece that dug into a controversy that people have been talking about in Manchester for, I think, just over 2 years now. And no piece is definitive, but it felt like kind of as close as possible to the definitive piece about this controversy. So we're going to talk about that in a minute. We're going to talk about your reporting process. We're going to reveal a couple of new things that we didn't reveal in the piece. And we're going to talk about why this controversy has really grabbed people in the way it has.
Yeah.
But first of all, we've got a sponsor.
Oh.
And actually, the sponsor, Manchester Museum, is where I was this morning. I visited the museum and I had a look around some of the galleries. There's an amazing gallery there called the Lee Kai Hung Chinese Culture Gallery. Opened up when the museum had its big sort of reopening last year. It's the first permanent gallery devoted to Chinese culture and the history of the museum. And it sits right next door to the South Asia Culture Gallery. And they're both very new and sort of innovative exhibits. The aim of this gallery is to promote empathy and understanding between the people of the UK and China. So it's got a whole range of exhibits and objects and stuff. One that I really liked is there's a deer in there, a sort of Milu deer. And it's a species that was rescued from the brink of extinction thanks to this international collaboration that took place.
Oh.
But then you've got loans from the Whitworth, Manchester Art Gallery, from the Rylands, textiles, amazing sort of carved jade artifacts. You've got porcelain vases, an astonishing kind of 20-meter long scroll. And something that I really liked on my visit this morning was there's a series of photos by a Liverpool-based photographer of Chinese-British or British-Chinese families in Liverpool and around about. And I thought those were some of the more powerful objects in there. So thank you to the museum for sponsoring this episode. And we really encourage our listeners to pop along because it's a thought-provoking gallery. And right next door is the South Asia Gallery that we've been talking about in the Mill recently. And actually, the big show downstairs, the mummies, the golden mummies, that's actually closing soon.
Wow.
So it's one of the last chances to see that. So thank you to them for sponsoring us. And do pop along to that. And we'll have a link in our show notes. Now, Jack, Night and Day. Take us back to late 2021. I believe that's when this all first started blowing up.
Yeah, so...
Suddenly you had social media going mad with posts. I remember it was one morning there were just millions of posts about Night and Day Cafe. It's a much-loved sort of gig venue, but also, controversially, kind of a nightclub as well, in the city centre, Dale Street, where I used to live, actually.
Oldham Street.
Oldham Street, but it's off Dale Street, isn't it?
The Night and Day Cafe is on Oldham Street.
Yeah.
The flat's on Dale Street.
That's it, okay. Right, good to get the addresses right from the beginning. This is a much-loved venue. It was a part of sort of the lore, the mythology of the early Northern Corsair.
Massively,
and there wasn't much around. This place was around. And as I say, things start blowing up on social media. Take us back to that period in late 2021.
Yeah, so in November 2021, the bar was issued with the quite blandly named noise abatement notice.
Yeah, I love how boring... and procedural and arcane that little instrument, that legal instrument,
has caused all of this drama.
Yeah, and caused so much drama. Yeah.
So they were issued it by Manchester City Council after a number of complaints were made to the venue about noise. So the complaints had come from a new neighbour, or relatively new neighbour, who'd moved in the year before during the lockdown. And obviously, because of the fact the time that they moved in, Night and Day was shut at that time, as all the other venues were. And then once it reopened in the summer of 2021, they then started filing complaints about the noise. So their main concern was about these late night DJ nights, ones that go from about 11 p.m. till 3 a.m. in the morning on Fridays and Saturdays. That's what they were complaining about.
So we're not talking about the thing that Night and Day is best known for, which is gigs, bands, etc.
No, and that's exactly what the noise abatement notice targeted, that offer, basically.
Yeah.
And when that happened, within a few days of the noise abatement notice being served, Night and Day then launched a petition asking people to support their cause in getting the noise abatement notice repealed. And from there, you then had this tidal wave of support for the venue, because it was, as you were saying before, this was a pioneer of the Northern Quarter. This is very much like a relic from another time, in a way, Night and Day Cafe. At a time when all of the city's changing, we have this one thing that's still there from the 90s that we can point to, and like that's where it all sort of came from.
Yeah.
And the places that its contemporaries, so to speak, like Dry Bar or Roadhouse and all those places that you could still give the same sort of platitude to, of sort of like, oh, those guys helped us create this. That's the one that's left. It's like, we've held on to this one. We can't lose it. And that's what made it so emotive.
So it's got a special place.
100%, yeah.
And when it all blew up, people were angry. Like, people were pissed. You know? It was like the council. I'd say the narrative right from the beginning was the council is trying to close down one of its biggest, one of the city's biggest cultural assets.
Yeah.
And there was a binary being drawn, which was, on the one hand, you've got grassroots culture, and on the other hand, you've got city centre dwelling, apartment dwelling people. You've got like this residential drive of people coming into the city. That's how the battle was sort of laid out in people's minds. Framed, yeah.
Massively. Yeah. And it was like the story in itself and the way that it happened, it was almost like too convenient. It was like, oh, so someone's complained, oh, and they've moved in when it was quiet, so they don't even realise that it was going to, and now they've complained that we've reopened.
Right.
Oh, the council have enforced this noise abatement notice. Oh, but it was the council who let the planning through on the flat, and now we know that there's a faulty wall in the flat, which became a big thing. And it was like, every point had a counterpoint, and that's what allowed people to carry on arguing about it for so long, because everyone could say something back to every point.
But it was a fairly one-way argument, wasn't it? Like, or at least, tell me if I'm wrong, but most of the posts I saw on Twitter and on Reddit were, what the hell is this resident doing complaining about a music venue? If you basically, I'd sum up the argument as, the dominant argument, let's call it the orthodoxy, as don't move into a flat above a music venue if you don't like noise.
Yeah, definitely. That was, and I think as well, and we say it in the piece, it's the very simple way of understanding it. And I think that's why that took precedent in many people's minds.
And also, it is just a legitimate point, isn't it? It's just like, clearly, if you live next to a music venue, it's going to be noisy. Can we just talk about this wall?
Yeah.
We are literally talking about a flat that shares a wall with the stage of a gig venue / nightclub.
Mm-hmm.
So there is absolutely no chance for escaping the noise, effectively.
Well, this is the thing. It's described in the judgment, which came in last Monday, as a faulty party wall, i.e. it's not sufficiently soundproof.
Okay.
i.e. it could be sufficiently soundproof, but it isn't.
Okay, so that was one dimension. Another huge dimension is, who are the people who move into the flat, which we're going to get into in a minute,
because
that's a lot of where this piece came from. In the period since that late 2021, I think it was November 2021, farrago, we have had a very drawn-out saga. And there have been legal hearings that have been adjourned. It's had loads of media coverage. It's had Guardian. It's had, you know, it's other nationals, hasn't it, as well? Why did you want to write about it originally?
Well, originally I wanted to write about it when the case was first adjourned at the start of last year.
Okay.
And that's when I managed to get hold of the guy who moved into the flat.
Who we're going to call Alex.
We call him Alex.
His actual name is out there, but like,
he's it's been reported since our piece again.
Yeah, he's had so much sick. We thought in return for him cooperating, we'd be happy to call him something else.
Yeah, because he gave us quite a lot, or he went quite in depth with us, which he hadn't done before.
Yeah,
and I got his number because a different previous tenant of the flat emailed me saying that he'd lived there before and that it was really bad and that there is more to this story than is being reported. And then he gave me Alex's number. And then when I first texted Alex, he was very, very reticent to speak to me. Mm. And Alex basically is someone, an outsider who's moved in about a year before the pandemic began on the other side of Dale Street.
So he had actually lived in the Northern Quarter before.
Yeah.
This isn't, so originally from the South, Alex, mm-hmm. and he lives with his partner.
Yep.
But he's not like he's new to the Northern Quarter.
No, and he said he has lots of family here. So he spent a lot of time here as a kid. He went to Night and Day as a teenager.
So he's saying he went there. So he, what he's saying is he was fully aware.
Fully aware. And he says, you know, part of the reason we wanted to move to the Northern Quarter in the first place was because of places like Night and Day.
That's mental.
Which is the mad thing now.
That is just poetic irony.
I know. trying to get to the vibrancy of places like Night and Day and what's in the Northern Quarter and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But what he didn't expect was obviously to have like the toilet water in his flat rippling at 3 a.m. and to have to wear earplugs in his house, which, say what you want, maybe I'm now being biased, but no one would expect that in any flat, in wherever it is in
and
the city.
And just to get the chronology straight, he knows about Night and Day. Mm-hmm. He says he's been there before. He nevertheless buys the flat knowing it's kind of in the, I mean, it's on a different street, but he kind of knows it's going to be backing onto it in some way, right? He probably doesn't realize quite how proximate it is, I would assume. He doesn't know it's like the same wall or whatever. But because it's the pandemic, when he moves in, there's kind of no way of him testing how loud it is. Yeah. So he takes a risk.
Yeah.
Did he admit to you that was a gamble? Or is he not thinking about it?
No, I mean, maybe he wasn't thinking about it, but he was told at the time that there'd been no previous complaints from the flat.
So he was lied to?
No. Well, it was true that there was no previous complaints to the council about the flat. Mm. It isn't true that there was no previous complaints to landlords about the flat.
Okay.
And that, I suppose, is the key difference. We haven't spoken to the landlords or letting agents, so it's a little bit of a...
Okay. We can probably assume that he was reassured.
Yeah.
That this would be fine.
Yeah.
And it obviously wasn't fine.
Evidently not.
Okay. How many complaints, like roughly speaking, went in before the noise abatement order happened? Because noise abatement, it's really interesting in your piece, you say there are hundreds of noise complaints every year that go into the council.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very few turn into a noise abatement order.
Yeah. So how many complaints do you mean that Alex made?
Yeah,
or generally?
Exactly. Yeah,
Alex made over in excess of 15 complaints.
And each time he basically says he went and met the people from Night and Day.
Yeah, so that's interesting. The reason that that is a thing is because Night and Day, and this again is something that I think was left out of a lot of the arguments, were that Night and Day had been served a noise abatement claim before in 2014 from a different housing development.
Yeah.
And then they appealed that and actually did get it dropped, but it was on the condition that they would meet with tenants on a regular basis or after complaints. So when Alex would make a complaint, he'd then go and meet Ben Smithson, who's the co-owner of Night and Day, and they would talk about possible solutions they could come to.
And then there's this bit, I'm going to read from your piece. There's this moment, and we're talking November 2021. You write, a few days later, Alex went into Night and Day for the usual post-complaint meeting. This was after a particularly bad night, right?
The 13th of November.
Yeah, I think he was brutally loud or something.
Ruthlessly
loud.
I think.
Interesting choice of words. He says, for the usual post-complaint meeting with Ben. And he said Ben had always been pretty friendly and nice to him. But I carry on. Which they had started having over coffee or a beer. Sounds quite pleasant, actually. Anyway. But this time, Ben seemed frosty. Unbeknownst to Alex, a noise abatement notice requiring Night and Day to stop the late night DJ sets it says it relies on financially had been served. Quote, regrettably, things will now have to get unpleasant, he remembers Ben saying. How? Quote from Ben, with the media. Now, it's fair to say, this is a remembered quote. It's not like he took a note at the time, probably, and he didn't record it. So this is a remembered quote. It might not be quite these words. And we don't have Ben's side of things, which was really annoying, actually.
Yeah, massively.
Because, I mean, I'm an editor and I always like push you guys to go and get quotes from people and to get their responses. And we're quite big on the old email people a few days before and try and get them to talk. You actually trying to get these guys to talk longer than that.
For a while.
Yeah. And I suppose what's disappointing is they had been so public. They had been fighting this war very successfully, very skillfully. Mm. Like, these guys are good. They know what they're doing. They fought this in the public domain. But when you then went to them with a set of questions that were maybe a little bit tougher, maybe they had some stuff that they didn't want to answer, they didn't want to chat.
Mm.
Which is, it was a shame. Mm. It was a shame. But anyway, just to put that caveat in. Anyway, so this is when the notice gets served.
Yeah.
Am I right in saying with a noise abatement notice, once it's been served, it can't just basically be withdrawn on
a yeah. Way. So what you have when you have a noise abatement notice, it is kind of in the name, abatement. You have to now abate that noise, the nuisance.
The noise must abate.
The noise must abate, yeah.
Is it like in a particular time period or something?
No, it's like, so you get, if you are causing a statutory nuisance,
yeah,
you now have to either stop that noise,
yeah,
you have to abate that noise, yeah, as you know, it would really require, or if you think it's been unjustly served, you appeal it, and that's how you can get it dropped.
Okay, which is obviously what happened.
Yeah, you have to be able to, it's on the person being served the notice, yeah, to prove that they've been unjustly served it.
And this is like a kind of, the interesting thing about your piece is a lot of the campaign about Night and Day was the council should withdraw its thing, right? Like, yeah, a lot of the demands were, well, the council hasn't withdrawn it. But you make the point in the piece that a noise abatement orders, that this is a statutory duty thing. What this means is that once someone's been found to unreasonably and substantially interfere with the use or enjoyment of a home or other premises, I actually regret reading out the whole thing, which the council had found in this case, it is legally bound to do something about it.
Yeah.
So then there is a subjective decision somewhere along the line. You've got to decide to pull the trigger. But after this many complaints, once council officer decides to do that, once the abatement notice is in place, it is up to whoever has been served to reduce that, as you just said. And then you have this paragraph where you show how rare the notices are. In 2021, City Council, Manchester, received 659 noise complaints.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's a surprise it's so few, given how many people live next to a student house, yeah, or whatever. You know, I live next to a student house and I've never made a complaint, but which is higher than other years. You say 433 for last year, for example. You say, either way, every other complaint in 2021 was resolved without a noise abatement notice from the council. It only served one, Night and Day. Now, you don't provide lots of commentary around that, but like, I think a lot of readers will draw the conclusion from that, okay, there's something going on with this Night and Day saga. Yeah. Has some unique dimensions to it. I think my impression from hearing you speak about this and reading the piece is that there were two parties in here, Night and Day and Alex, who got pretty dug in.
Got pretty entrenched.
They dug their trenches. Is that the impression you got?
Yeah, and I feel like it's more true in Night and Day's case. And I completely understand why. Because if I was in the position of the owners of Night and Day and everything that you read about your own dispute is backing you, why would you ever think, oh, actually, maybe I need to think, well, I could, because it's like, well, everyone backs me.
Yeah.
Everyone's telling me that I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Literally everyone that I speak to says, yes, I support you. You shouldn't have to deal with this. Not only that, they will tell you it is the council's fault and that the council should drop this thing that they actually can't drop. I think like at the root of all of this, the very first, if I was to find or be so bold as to say there was a kernel of the issue, it is the root misunderstanding of what the notice was and how it worked. But
Night and Day knew that.
Yeah, they'd been served one before. I just mean in the general public. Yeah. There was no point. And even though the council put out many, many quotes being like, we are not trying to shut Night and Day, we are legally obliged to do this thing. Like, the average reader, when they see council spokesperson says, probably just goes to the next paragraph in many cases, because when they read that, it's like, well, that's what you have to say. You could probably do it. And there's all these other things where it's kind of like, Andy Burnham could change this with a snap of his fingers, and what's Sacha Lord doing, the nighttime economy advisor, and all that kind of thing. And it's like, this is just law, and you can't change it. And if that had been better understood, or if that had been pointed out sooner, that would have helped.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that Night and Day won the media war.
Massively.
And the council probably could have made the points that got made in this piece.
Well, it's like we said, you talked about those numbers.
Mm.
The council had those prepared for years.
And they hadn't.
And then when I asked for them, we were like, oh yeah, we've had these prepared for ages, but we've just been waiting for someone to ask for them.
So were the council scared? Like, was the Night and Day tsunami of public support, you're talking celebrities, you're talking musicians, people going on the radio. I mean, I don't know, can we play a clip of someone talking about Night and Day on the radio right now?
Yeah, Guy Garvey probably.
Right, let's throw it in.
It was, we used to give out the phone number of the venue as our phone number, pre-mobiles. We met when I was 17 and we didn't get a record deal till I was 25, and in the meantime, that was the hub for all of Manchester's music, not just music, but its literature and its arts, and it remains that to this day.
Okay, so you've got celebrities talking about this. Does the council just get a bit scared and think, actually, we think we've got a little bit more of a point to make here, but we don't want to go against the grain? I don't know.
I think as well, there was just such an emotive thread that they were pulling on, which is like, this is a city council that touts this musical heritage, and yeah, here's the place that in our argument, is the very root of that musical heritage, and you're willing to pull it away just so that you can have more city centre residents and flats, was the argument really, wasn't it? It's like, you are sacrificing your musical heritage for this.
Yeah, so it plays into this wider story of Manchester is pursuing a development-led economic model that's all about getting tens of thousands of slightly more affluent middle-class people to live in the city centre, and here is where the rubber meets the road. Here is the damage you're doing to the very heritage that made you cool in the 90s. That's the story, isn't it?
And then
it's like, people like a clear story.
Yeah. And what riles so many people up is that at the same time that this was all going on, there was all this broader cultural development that the council were back in, like, Factory International or Aviva Studios and stuff like that, and it's kind of like, you can't trade on our heritage whilst also destroying our heritage. And it was very much, it was a clear and easy way to, and it worked with a lot of people.
Okay, let me just introduce an aspect of this story that was exclusive to this story, and also I think raises questions about your source. And I know, like, you have a pretty nuanced view of what's gone on here, but let me introduce something that I think goes on the pro Night and Day side of the ledger. Okay, I'm gonna read from the piece again. Last summer, Alex received a visit from someone who was interested in buying. On the face of it, this was a surprising development. There isn't usually a strong market for flats at the centre of a legal wrangling over noise complaints. But in this instance, the prospective buyer probably wasn't looking to move in. The man who turned up for a viewing was Matt Healy, the 34-year-old lead singer of the 1975. Okay, this was a new detail that you had in the story. Great detail. Fantastic detail. A massive pop star who's rumoured in the papers at the time or whatever at some point to have been dating Taylor Swift. So a massive figure turns up and offers to buy the flat off Alex and his partner. And we knew, or people knew, that he was supporting Night and Day because he'd done an Instagram post about it, etc. Yeah. And he had said on, you know, that he had that there's this sign, Save Night and Day, he's holding it. This cannot happen. The council need to drop the case, which, as we know, isn't really within their gift.
No.
Anyway, you revealed that he actually tried to buy the flat. Not only did he try, he made an offer. Yeah. And he made an offer which was way over what they had paid for it.
Yeah.
Now, okay, it's a couple of years later, so you might expect a bit of, I don't know, upside. But also,
but not for that flat.
But not for this flat. Like, this flat is like the one flat in Manchester no one wants, right? 55,000 more. So a cash offer of 275,000, which is 55,000 more than the couple had paid.
Yeah.
This is a great offer. You've literally got a club or a gig venue through your wall, making your life misery. Your partner has gone through, you know, major sort of, you know, mental health issues ever, or at least psychological after effects of it. I don't know exactly how to phrase that. But effectively, it's caused a lot of damage. You have had to move out of the flat because it's so dreadful. They had to move to somewhere near sort of Manchester. You described that in the piece. And here comes the perfect knight in shining armor. Here's the solution. This pop star offers. And then you write in the piece, Alex admits he was on the fence about whether to sell. I have to say, when I was editing this piece, I put a note in the copy and I said, sorry, Jack, you need to explain this more. Readers are going to go nuts. You're talking about a guy who's turning around a profit and to get out of the situation. And, you know, you write in the piece, like, was it stubbornness? Had all the players in the dispute dug themselves in so far they'd taken leave of their senses? I mean, this is the bit where you're a bit like, this guy's not acting rationally either. Maybe Night and Day are being a bit more unreasonable than the public realised, right? Maybe. That's a potential opinion you could have after reading this piece. But this guy, what is he doing?
Yeah.
Take the money, man. Do you know what I mean?
Massively. And it was when we were on the phone and he said it, I was just a bit like, okay. But it was interesting because he said afterwards, what I didn't quote, was that he made a point that was true in two ways. He said, it wouldn't have solved the problem. You know, it wouldn't have really solved, it just would have been, everyone would have just got bought out and would have walked away. So what he's trying to make there, I think, is a bit of a morality point.
Yeah.
If it's kind of like, well, I'm not just going to let them just buy me out now after they've caused me all of this, you know, well, in his view, they've caused me all this trouble. They've dragged it out this way. Am I just going to let them buy me out after all this? No. But two, he made the point that it wouldn't have changed anything, because it literally wouldn't have changed anything. If Matt Healy had bought that flat, it wouldn't have got the noise abatement notice dropped anyway, because the notice isn't attached to the complainant, it's attached to the venue. Yeah. It's their job. You know, you could, everyone who lives around Night and Day right now could move out forever.
Oh, I see.
And Night and Day would still always have that noise abatement.
In a sort of nuclear apocalypse.
Yeah. Night and Day would still have to be quiet. Like, it's just...
yeah, okay.
What confused me when that was going on is that in the 2014 case, there was a lot of allegations that Night and Day had offered to buy that flat,
yeah,
and then pulled out of it because they realised it wouldn't have sorted out the noise abatement claim. But then they still let Matty Healy go ahead to make an offer, which makes me think it was for a different reason.
So you think it might be a more publicity thing?
More of a publicity thing, or...
Although they never released the... Well, it didn't happen.
Because it didn't happen. Yeah. And also because, I suppose as well, Alex wasn't offering to put the flat on the market because he didn't want to sell it, as he said.
Yeah.
It will have put more pressure on him to sell
it. But you accept it's bizarre.
Oh, still, yeah. If I was him, I would have sold the flat, yeah.
You literally would have bitten their hand off.
Yeah, yeah.
So either this guy... You know when you get in an argument with someone and you actually didn't really believe in the thing at the beginning, but 2 hours later, you're like, really dug it. Like, yeah. It's like humans become irrational when they've been challenged or whatever, and it's just like becomes a pride thing. I wonder whether that was part of it. Because you just give me two reasons why he wouldn't take it, but those are both reasons that, like, in the macro sense, but for him as a person,
yeah.
Why should he care about that?
Yeah, you know? No, he's entrenched.
So that's all very odd. And that's, there was a BBC journalist who shared this, being like, this is a brilliant long read, and then someone replied saying, oh, I didn't know who to back, and she was like, yeah, that's why it's good. Like, you're going through the piece and you're not really sure what's going on. There was someone on Reddit who said, I both sympathize with and despise both, like, parties, i.e. Alex and his partner and Night and Day, through this piece. And that's such an interesting, I think that's partly why it did so well. There is an ambiguity sort of running through it. Can we just get into some new material that wasn't in the piece? You heard from the PRs, though, you know, that was it Matt Healy's agent or someone
A representative,
someone in his in his entourage, let's say. And they basically said it wasn't just about this Malaysian festival where they might get sued.
Well, we should contextualise it if someone's not read it. I presume people who are listening to this have.
All right, so I'll contextualise. Yeah,
it also makes sense to say that he didn't actually turn down the offer.
Yeah.
He was thinking about it, and then the choice was taken out of his hands.
So the offer was withdrawn. We say in the piece, and you know, we got this from good sources, that it was because Matt Healy's band, the 1975, might have been sued by the Malaysian government because of this kissing on stage.
They weren't sued by the government. They were sued by the
festival
organiser who got closed down by the...
Okay, we're getting very under the bonnet of all that. But anyway, there might have been a lawsuit, and therefore it was kind of like, don't make any financial commitments because you might get sued.
Yeah.
But you've since heard from his team, who don't deny that, to be clear.
Yeah.
But they actually say there was a bigger reason.
Yeah, which is the one that I made before, which is that Healy apparently cooled on the deal when he realised that buying the flat wouldn't have caused the noise abatement notice.
It was a solution that wouldn't have worked.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. First of all, that's a great little exclusive, that whole celebrity thing. Well done. Secondly, I think it's the first celebrity story involving a Mancunian that isn't on the MEN. I haven't seen it.
Crazy.
I haven't seen it mentioned on the MEN. Very strange. But he's originally from Cheshire, isn't he?
Alderley Edge, didn't he grow up?
Alderley Edge. His mum is...
Denise Welch and his dad's Tim Healy. Why can't I say the... What's German goodbye? That, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, bit of context on him. Anyway, so the deus ex machina, you could call it, that could have solved the problem doesn't end up solving the problem. So, can I take you to another very intriguing aspect of this?
Mm-hmm.
Could it have been solved exactly in the way it's been resolved by the judge, which you're going to tell us about now?
Yeah.
Could it have been resolved in exactly that way a year ago?
Why has Night and Day Cafe been in a 3-year legal battle? In November 2021, the popular music venue was given a noise abatement notice by Manchester City Council after a neighbour made noise complaints.
Apparently.
Okay. What is that solution?
What Judge McCormack... judgment was, is that Night and Day can carry on working the same operating hours, so i.e. it can continue to host these late night events, the DJ nights on Friday and Saturday, but they have to use what are called noise limiters while doing it, which will stop sound from getting above a certain decibel.
What is that? Is that literally like a piece of like hardware? Is that like software?
Yeah, it can be sort of sealed into the DJ deck or into the amp or whatever, and it will basically mean that won't go above a certain
physically limits
level.
It.
Yeah, physically as much as you can physically limit sound. Yeah, I mean, some of them will, if you go above whichever decibel you decide, will just cut off the music. Obviously, that would be a massive problem for them.
Right.
The other ones are, I don't know which one they'll use, by the way, because they have 28 days to put them in place from the judgment. So I guess that's what they're deciding at the minute. The other option is you have like a traffic light one that someone has to be monitoring all the time and have to watch it and be like, no, stuff like that. Anyway.
we're back in the weeds.
Yeah.
I hope listeners are loving the level of Anorakish detail.
Yeah. Well,
any other info on noise limiter options before we...
No, there's great. Plenty though. I mean, great. They want to get in touch, I can talk them through. But anyway, yeah, so that was what the judge decided. You need to do this with this and then you can stay open.
So the judge last week upheld the noise abatement.
Yeah, exactly.
So it wasn't like the council had got it wrong. This noise abatement notice is legitimate.
Yeah.
But they offered a way for night and day to continue operating.
Yeah, it was the common sense solution is how it was described when it happened. Common sense has prevailed.
Yeah, it does sound common sense to me.
The issue is that this same solution apparently prevailed last year.
Okay, fascinating. What do you mean?
There were many, many times when the council and Night and Day met up and talked about how to solve this issue. I know that Bev Craig went in personally.
Leader
of the city council. Bev Craig went in personally to try and speak to the owners,
mm-hmm.
and she didn't find a solution. The CEO of Manchester City Council went in. The leader, I think it was the executive on neighbourhoods. All these people went in.
All the big wigs.
There were, you know, is it without prejudice meetings? Those where nothing was off the table.
Prejudice meeting, which I know well from my recent legal wranglings with various people, is when you meet someone and the content of what you say can't be used in a later legal case.
Yeah, exactly. That's there was plenty of those where, as I was told by an off the record source, everything was on the table.
Right.
One source who said that soundproofing was offered by the council. They said that they would pay for it and then the council denied that, but they did say they looked into funding options to help with things.
So it looks like, not to be an absolute establishment stooge, it looks like the council did make a good faith attempt, actually lots of attempts, to solve this problem.
Yeah, and this is while the appeal was going on. The adjournments and stuff. Some of the adjournments were because they were having last minute talks again, so they needed to talk outside of court and this kind of thing. And then last year, apparently, there was an agreement to have same operating hours, but with noise limiters. And then Night and Day pulled out of it. And I was told that was on the advice of their lawyer, Sarah Clover Casey, who represented them in the appeal case that then followed after.
So there's a quote in your piece where a source tells you, very well placed source, "I know things were agreed at the highest level. And when they went back to Sarah Clover, she said no."
Mm.
Now, Sarah Clover hasn't spoken to us.
No, she's also not.
I've seen an email which she sent you, which she basically said, "I don't want to talk about this sort of thing." She didn't want to speak to you. She suggested in that email that we'd got our facts wrong, let's say. But she didn't say about what.
Mm.
It's one of those ones where, like, you're on the wrong track.
I won't
tell you what the right track is. We haven't heard from Sarah Clover since. She is a top KC, so if anyone's going to get the right details, you know, it's probably someone like her. So we don't know if this thing is true, but we reported it because we had a very, very good source and we checked it and we didn't get any pushback to that specific claim. And we actually heard, let's say we were encouraged to believe it was true from another source, right?
Mm.
So it was a very intriguing detail because what it suggests is that there was a solution on the table that could have saved tens of thousands of pounds in legal fees, taxpayers' money, but also crucially, think of all the time, like, I know, like, Bev Craig spending 2 hours having a meeting isn't like, you know, you can't measure that. But, like, that's the leader of the city going to a venue and having a meeting. Like, all the different senior meetings that, like, there are so many problems to solve in this city. Like, we've got a massive homelessness problem.
Mm.
We've got, rising rents, we've got services that aren't working, we've got streets that don't seem to be cleaned, we've got the massive Piccadilly Gardens. You could name so many things that you want your leaders to be dealing with. And a certain portion of our council's time, I don't know what it was spent dealing with a freaking noise complaint from one venue.
Mm.
And what your story is suggesting is that could have been avoided.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the time. I think it was over 220 hours were spent by council officers on the case.
That's absolutely
insane. One of them was described as having his life completely taken over by it.
Sorry, 220 hours?
Yeah, that was reported by the Local Democracy Reporting Service. When they found out how much they'd spent, they also looked into how much time the council had spent working on the case.
That's mad. That's an internal legal team. Thousands of pounds. But more, it's just like, you know, we don't know exactly what happened in these discussions. But you know, we got it from good sources that there was a real solution on the table. We don't know why Night and Day pushed back. Maybe there was a really good reason. Maybe they thought they were going to win the legal case. Maybe Sarah Clover had a better solution or whatever. We don't know. But we couldn't get more from them because they didn't speak to us.
Yeah.
Night and Day didn't speak to us. You went to the owners directly. They didn't speak to us. Sarah Clover didn't speak to us. So this is where we're left with. And it, you know, if the people from Night and Day want to come on the podcast next week and fill in their side of it, having read our piece, yeah, I think that would be really good. Be really good, because we're not saying we've got all of it here, but it's a bloody weird saga.
It is. And I think it's obviously now in the aftermath of the verdict. You had this judge put on the record, so to speak, that the Northern Quarter has evolved from a cultural area to a mixed-use area, which has now led lots of people to be like, well, we should be worried because now... And again, I think this is rooted in this thing of like councils looking to put in noise abatement orders and stuff. Because it's like, oh, well, now the council will be even more emboldened to do this because it will be able to argue that this is a mixed-use area. And it's like, you've just talked there about the amount of time that the council have had to put into this, the amount of money, and... Do you really think now the council would be like, huh, we should do this again? Let's try and put a few more of this in these noise abatement orders out there because it's a great use of our time. Yeah. Like, the key thing with why the judge's verdict isn't a victory for anyone.
It's a finding, not a verdict.
Finding. Whatever it is, yeah. The reason that it's not a victory for anyone is because Night and Day still have an open-ended noise abatement and the council still have to carry on enforcing it.
Yeah.
And everyone, you know, a good proportion of the city don't like the council for having to do that.
It's funny because there are so many things that we've reported on in the past year where we've hammered the council and we've criticised them and we've given them a bloody hard time. I have to say, having read all your reporting on this and whatever, I don't think this is one of the issues that people should be hammering the council on. I actually think they come out of it as fairly reasonable operators, actors in their sense.
Unreasonable though in the amount of time that they've been required to spend on it, I think.
Yeah, that's the thing I can't get my head around. That's why I'd love to have Night and Day. Why don't we put a request in?
Yeah.
Come on a podcast next week and just talk us through, like, now it's all done and dusted. Like, what on earth? I mean, the other question I have is a really boring one, which is these noise limiters. I mean, I've never been to a DJ night where maybe I have been to one where there was a noise limiter on, but presumably that really limits the... Like, you can't have a DJ night that isn't super loud.
The experience, you mean?
Well, yeah, like, how's that going to work?
So the...
Should we go to one of their nights to see what it's like?
Yeah, you might get into the weeds again here. They had a profile done by an acoustician who basically found what was called in the case as the sweet spot, which would limit the noise so that it didn't disturb neighbours, but wouldn't limit it so much that it would impact a customer's experience. So that... is the difference.
That's what
they're looking for, I think.
Right, okay. Just go along to where they... Do you remember the lunch I had with you where I was like, should we get our own acoustician
to give her
an analysis? And you said there have been enough acousticians.
Massively. So. It's funny, the Manchester Confidentials did the same thing in 2014, paid for their own acoustician. They didn't let them in.
Well, there's no such thing as a new idea. My final question, because I really didn't expect to make an episode this long about a bloody noise abatement notice, but there's an interesting kind of... Like, so people have responded to your story in very interesting ways, I'd say. Look at the tweets and read it. It's definitely led some people to be like, okay, there's a bit more going on, which is nice when you can get that reaction on a piece of journalism. The finding from the judge has led some people in the music community to really go at the council, hasn't it?
Like, yeah.
It's been a you'll tell me. But it's also, I think, there are also people who are holding back and not signing things and not saying things. Mm. This is slightly splitting the music community and the nightlife community and local politics in the way that it definitely wasn't a couple of years ago when people were getting out doing their viral tweets. Tell us about that a bit.
Well, yeah, so you had a release from the Greater Manchester Music Commission. So this is a commission that was set up by Andy Burnham.
Yeah.
After he got back in 2019, was it?
Right. Was it delayed by the pandemic?
Oh, possibly.
I feel like it was 2021.
It started work in 2022, this commission. Right. And then, it was set up in 2021 after it got back in. So they released a statement that was absolutely scathing of the council.
Yeah, what were they saying?
They were essentially saying, you know, we still exist in a system that can't admit past failures and doesn't understand its city and all this sort of thing. Wow. Doesn't, you know, it was everything that you had heard already, but it was like by a real body.
And this was after the finding.
So this was in response.
Yeah.
So they were like, we're delighted that they can still stay open, but... And then they said all this stuff.
It was a big but.
It was a big but.
Big A4 page of but.
Really. It was interesting. You get to the bottom and you look at the number of people who signed it. There was like... I think there was about just over 10, something like that. But there's 28 members of this.
Was it 13 who had signed it?
Yeah, but there's 28 members of the commission, so less than half of them have actually signed it, which piqued our interest. And also, as you said, we mentioned in a comment somewhere, we took it out of the story when we first quoted it because we realised, like, oh, wait, this has actually only been signed by half of them. So it would appear that this big commission, which is essentially like the Greater Manchester Combined Authority's, not advisory board on music, but it kind of helps with what to do in the city about culture, is divided on this issue.
Which I think they divided, or did some people just not sign it?
I did speak to somebody who was on the board, and they said...
They didn't want to sign it.
They said, listen, this went out 12 hours. We received this 12 hours before it was sent out, and we're asked to just, you know... Yeah. But I also, while I appreciate that, it's also kind of like, does it take 12 hours to read a page of A4 and sign it?
So you, from calls you've had, you reckon not everyone agreed with this very forthright...
Very combative statement.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, the author of the statement is the co-chair, Jay Taylor, who used to be the programmer at Night and Day.
Okay, right. So,
yeah.
So, okay. So, what about Burnham? Because his commission has come out and absolutely slaughtered the council.
Mm.
And what's Burnham saying? I just couldn't find any quotes from him.
There have been not much from Burnham.
Yeah.
And in the same way that there hasn't been much from the council since, because it's just kind of, I think, draw a line under it.
Yeah.
We got out relatively unscathed. No one said that we did anything wrong.
Mm.
So let's just push on. I mean, it is fair to say as well that in this whole, like we were saying before, it's a statutory notice that that Manchester City Council, which isn't part of the Great Manchester Combined Authority, it's a separate thing. They had to do that. It was never in Burnham's power to come in and go,
no, but he's kind of thing he talks about.
No, of course. And I mean, like, he goes to Night and Day Cafe, doesn't he? And right. I think he held an after party there at one point. It might have been after that.
Check the decibels on that.
No, it might have been after the DJ night thing that he did with Steve Rotherham. I think he went to Night and Day after. And that was a kind of nod to the cafe of kind of being like, listen, we know. But like, it's like, but equally now, it's a bit weird. It's complicated, isn't
it? So we're going to ask Burnham what he thinks.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So you'll find out. Jack, fascinating story. I have to admit, more interesting than I was expecting. I was a little bit wary when you and Sophie said this is going to be the great piece we're going to do, because I just thought, God, this had so much coverage. This had wall to wall. It's had so many tweets.
Mm.
I'm just sick of Night and Day. But actually, when I got the copy and read it, I thought it was very interesting. And people loved it. So well done. Listeners, thank you for bearing with us through 45 minutes of tedious detail about noise limiters, the thickness of walls, and all that sort of paraphernalia. If you like this kind of journalism, if you think like this kind of journalism is... it benefits a city, like if it's good for Manchester to have a thing that isn't just about like the latest headline or the latest press release or the latest thing, but actually spends ages. I mean, you spent ages on this piece. If you think that's the kind of journalism that's good, we'd love you to become a paying subscriber, because our whole mission, our whole thing, our whole newsroom that we're sitting in, it's all paid for by readers. We've currently got about 2,850, I think, paying subscribers on the mill. And the more we get, the more we can do, basically. Effectively, the more we get, the more ambitious stuff we can do. The more time we can give to reporters, the more pints we can buy to shady music industry sources that we're talking to. So, yeah, if you like this kind of thing and you're not a member already, please do become a member. Just go to manchestermill.co.uk and upgrade your... I'm assuming you're already on our free list, but upgrade it to paid, because it'd be massively appreciated. And then drop Jack a line to say you've joined. It'd be jack@manchestermill.co.uk. If you have tips, if you have ideas, if you have bits of information that would help us with this kind of story, please hit up Jack. And thanks very much for listening. And Molly and Jack will be back for the next episode very soon.
See you soon.
See you soon.